Tacky Talk time with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy. Happy Tuesday, Tacky.
Happy Tuesday, Joe, October 7th. And we're back into a cycle of warm on October 7th. So, hope everyone got a chance to enjoy another summery weekend to get some stuff done outside and enjoy the food truck festival on Saturday.
Yeah, it was a huge turnout. It was almost like a summer day there, so it was great.
We've been very lucky on these weekends outside of the summer months where none of us got to do anything the weekend outside. Between the heat, humidity, and the rain. And obviously, you're aware there's drought conditions going on in New England. And much needed rain on Wednesday. I know this isn't supposed to be a weather forecast show, but we are under a community, so we're fairly fortunate. But those are well communities. Lots of rain in short periods doesn't solve the problem because of the way groundwater evaporates and moves around in the ground. So even though there's a lot of rain this summer, it doesn't mean that they have large reservoirs of water in the ground in the fall. So, it's dependent on more rain and snowpacks as we get to the winter.
And I should wish you a happy harvest moon, right? Or August moon
Yes,
in October.
absolutely. I know, guys. It's October, and we say August moon. It's a harvest moon. It's driven by the lunar calendar. So, well, obviously, you all know we do August moon festivals, not just in Quincy, but around the country inside the month of August, because it's actually easy to explain to people in the month of August. And honestly, weather tends to be best in August, has the lowest probability of rain. It's one of the reasons we keep it in August, believe it or not. However, we do follow the lunar calendar. So, for the purposes of the lunar calendar of how Chinese New Year starts, not on the Gregorian calendar, because you may be aware that Lunar New Year tends to start sometime in late February, sometime in late, well, early, sometime in February, it's like very late January, sometime in by mid-February on the lunar calendar. August, the 8th month, would be put into the months of September and October, depending on when the calendar starts, lunar calendar starts at the beginning of this year. So as a result, we are, for the purpose of lunar calendar, is inside the August section, which is the 8th month. And the harvest moon represents the end of the harvest season. And as a result, obviously, that'll be a fall situation in most of Asia on the harvest season, not all of it, but most of it. And they would celebrate the harvest moon, which would be the biggest moon of the biggest full moon of the cycle, which if you out last evening, which was a very clear night, that was a super bright moon.
Oh yeah, I mean, I thought the sun was coming up for a minute there. Like, what's going on outside?
Yeah, it was so bright that I was in Boston for an evening event at the Museum of Science with the Korean government, and it was so bright the city lights could not drown out that moon.
Yes, yeah, it was spectacular. It really was. It was beautiful.
Yep, and that's kind of how that calendar works. So there's been smaller August moon events. For example, Braintree had one a couple of weeks back, getting ready for the August moon. The Vietnamese community held theirs this past Saturday in Little Saigon. In Little Saigon, they've done it for several years now, but they decided to hold theirs in the lunar calendar. They got lucky. It was a wonderful night on Saturday to hold.
Yes. So you were meeting with the Korean government. Are they upset at our government?
Well, it's actually, I mean, I wouldn't use the word upset. I think it's growing concern. So, those who may not be aware, this city actually hosts about 50 plus consul generals. So, we don't get ambassadors. Ambassadors go to Washington, D.C. There's one ambassador from each country in Washington, D.C. But, there are consul generals, there are regional representation for foreign governments. And the State Department works on arrangements with the foreign governments on how many consul general offices they're allowed to have. And it's generally reciprocation. If we get let's say six of them in foreign country, they generally get a negotiation of six or some number that makes sense. And friendly countries are generally easier to deal with than adversarial countries. So in Korea, it's not a big geographic country. It's not like the United States needs six consul general offices in Korea, for example, or 20 consul generals. So if you look at the geography, it doesn't make sense. But there are U.S. representation outside of the ambassador in Seoul. They have regional consul generals as well as trade groups and like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, for example, which you may be aware is like this big lobbying group in D.C. It has presence in other friendly countries, in particular where they have like a sister or brother type organization represent U.S. commerce interests. So that's something that, outside of State Department, but it's actually kind of diplomatic and not diplomatic at the same time. It's kind of one of those quasi things, like the Taiwanese, while not as a recognized country, is recognized through economic development zones, of which the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is heavily involved in. So in this instance, Boston actually hosts, up to over 50 consul generals, and Korea's being one of them. And the Korean government consul general came to see me, and we have actually a few events because Korean Foundation Day is this month, celebrating the 4,300, I think, 55th anniversary. I have to look it up. It's well over 4,300 years with the anniversary establishment of Korea. And as you all know, the Hyundai situation, where they arrested essentially Hyundai employees and put them in essentially chain gang scenario and shipped them off, was plastered all over Korean news and all through Asia, actually. It was one of those really kind of awful images being sent out on visa violations that could have been resolved based by talking to the company, because it's like the 600th biggest country on the planet, Hyundai. It's just a terrible image. And visa violations has been going on even in Boston. And there's about 70 major companies from South Korea in Boston area, and they contribute tens and tens of millions of dollars of payroll and ancillary economic development. One of the things that have happened is that these foreign companies are heavily rethinking about their investment in the United States. So you may be aware that watching the current trade wars, the president was able to do an agreement of 15% tariffs and $350 billion of foreign investment from Korea to the United States. That's the Korean government's investment. That is not private investment. And private investment is much more fluid and flexible than government investment. So while they may, the president may be getting some more assistance from a foreign government, which, by the way, is kind of like, think about this, you're depending on a foreign government for local investment. But the United States, it makes it sound like we're poor. I'm just telling you. We generally help other people, not the other way around. Just letting, just put that image in your head for one moment. It makes like we're needy. But that being said, so right now the real concern I have is regarding immigration. This is something I've talked about multiple times in federal government's inability to actually get their head around immigration. And given the fact that they can't even get their head around immigration on bringing folks over of based on foreign investment, is completely appalling. And their inability to get their act together at this. There's about 87,000 visas a year on a business type. I know there's about 110 types of visas. It's a very complicated system in this country. It should not be this complicated, but we make it complicated. And if you want other folks' money to be put in your country, you got to make ways for them to get over here. And the domestic argument is that, well, the ability here, we use American workers. Sure, who's going to train those American workers? Not everything can be done over Zoom, right? And that's actually part of it too. And obviously, intellectual property is a big concern for private companies. They want to be able to maintain those controls, just like we like to maintain our controls over intellectual property. And also, they want to make sure that their own accountants and their own folks are, minding their books. And they want to be able to come inspect their own companies. So, they want to be able to travel back and forth and do their own inspections to ensure that their company's in compliance with U.S. law and regulations, but also make sure they're in compliance with their own country's law and regulations. People kind of oversimplify the fact that, oh, you can just dump your money here and just, we'll take care of it. I mean, no. If you're willing to do that, you're be my guest to another, go to another country or another state, or go to your next door neighbor and just dump money on them and say, good luck. I mean,
Well, actually, we're seeing other countries try to take advantage of that, and try and lower private investment into their countries.
well, yeah, unfriendly environment locally, and we're a very rich country. I like to keep reminding folks, in the big picture, we're still the wealthiest country on the planet, big picture wise. Yeah, I mean, the U.S. investment, I'll say this again, U.S. money makes the world go around. It isn't complicated, and we should not be. We are not a needy country. I don't like being portrayed as a needy country, and neither should you. But what do I know? It's just my own personal opinion. But yeah, the Korean government's very concerned about, the fact that they don't know what the future holds, and it's hard to do business without some degree of assurance of understanding. And Korean nationals, the citizens, are having an increasing negative view of U.S. citizens because, we elect our government. They know that. And their own government has had many turmoils regarding corrupt presidents. However, they did get rid of the corrupt presidents and had new turmoil during elections. However, the system works for them because in the past they've had dictators, and they created mechanisms to prevent new dictators. And the population, despite being very politically divided like the United States, they're not exactly what I call independently thinking unenrolled voters. They actually have a very divided political party like ourselves. They have to work those things through the on the local level as well, culturally, where people at the local level, just like us, need to put our differences aside, for the benefit of the bigger picture. And they're struggling with that too. You see the same struggle in Japan, where they have an increasing divide between the political parties that's trickled down to regular people in the street, where it's behaving a lot like Americans. And they're trying to figure out how to, bring back people to agree to disagree as well. And you see that all through Europe. Germany, France is having a had lost another prime minister, six prime ministers lost in 2 years. Macron, President Macron, has a ton of problems. And you also saw that in England during Brexit, where you had a very divided public, where the kind of the visceral nature of that policy decision really, reached a certain level at a local level. Things changed, they move on to something different, right? So people think this unique situation, isn't unique. The United States political divide at the local level is not a unique problem. It's really a global problem in first world nations, particularly democratic first world nations. Obviously, countries that do not have democracy do not have this problem.
No, they just have a dictators.
Yeah, and they send the military in, crush them, and move on. Or you have an autocratic society where people literally just disappear into the government and you don't see them again. So,
AKA Russia, right?
yeah. And then, the US government is deporting again. They got agreements in some African countries to deport migrants that shouldn't be here, immigrants that are here undocumented. And they sent some Chinese and Vietnamese out to Africa as opposed to sending back to the country of origin. This is just because people see brown folks getting deported, Asian folks are getting very much deported as well. And I don't think people realize that until the Honda incident, how much it's happening.
Meantime, our government is still shut down.
I didn't realize, and we talked about this last week, was that 2018 was the longest shutdown at 35 days. You might be looking to break a new record. The thing I didn't realize too, until I started reading a little more about it, was that this shutdown is different from 2018 and those prior because of the size of the shutdown. I was unaware that this shutdown actually included all military personnel's paychecks. Actually affects congressional staff paychecks. Historically, they've shielded themselves from shutdown pay. It's trickled to all essential employees. So essential employees like public safety, air traffic controllers, congressional staff, presidential staff, U.S. military, Coast Guard, all of that, the payroll's not being done. It's well past 1 million people, and that doesn't count the vendors. So private contractors, vendors are not getting paid too. And yeah, they're going to get their back pay, but in the near term, they're going to be put on unemployment, which is already taxed very hard. I mean, it's a system that's very overwhelmed right now in certain places like Massachusetts, that unemployment 4.8 and rising, and the federal government shutdown affects 25,000 employees, which will be unemployment. And they're going to qualify, if this continues, for social services, of which the federal government has already announced many cutbacks. And we've been receiving information at the State House exactly what the projections are looking like, which is actually quite frightening if you want to go through
Sorry.
with them. So, as Secretary Minister of Finance announced that the immediate tax impact of the federal changes, the big, beautiful thing they passed, is going to have a tax shortfall of $650 billion. I'm sorry, $650 million. On taxes because of federal government pullback. So that means that there's the economic stimulus caused by like grant programs and like tourism impacts and things like that, it's going to add up to about perhaps $600 million, $650 million of taxes collected, not federal dollars, just taxes. So we got to look at that. And that's such a projection. We don't know what's going on exactly. It could be bigger, it could be smaller, but that's the tax impact by the federal government. Obviously, federal employees don't work. Well, that's even a bigger tax impact for a while. So we've been talking to Father Bills and those guys, and the homeless shelters are now at winter capacity, which means they're at full capacity as it was the winter months. And of course, we're in a warm day today. And federal cutbacks is looking to cut back 25% of all beds around, and this affects all homeless shelters in the state. So what about some kind of outside assistance that's not federally funded? You know, their capacity end up to slice off 25%. And you guys are aware, you know, if you go around many streets, you do see homeless people, but it's not like we're living in like San Francisco or LA or New York City has a right to shelter state, but you know, go to other states, I mean, they're much more obvious. And again, we would tend to look past them like they're invisible. We do have a bad habit of doing that as people. But you rarely see it, and we rarely see children in the street that are homeless. Not like it doesn't happen, but it's very rare. So, you know, the right to shelter program in Massachusetts is predominantly domestic residents at this point. And as the homeless shelters can't take people, they got to go somewhere. So there's going to be some shifting going on, but we don't take single men. That you want to take vulnerable populations of pregnant women and women with children into the emergency shelter program. So if you're a single individual with no children and you're not disabled or something like that, you know, you're going to be on the street. Project Bread tells us that you know, we're going to change the reimbursement rate for SNAP program workers. It's a 50-50 split shared program between the state and federal government. The federal government's only going to pay 25% of the salaries, not, and we have to pick up 75% from 50%. Which, and we also are looking at a situation where caseworkers are in, well, closing on 1,000 cases per individual worker. And given projections of the federal impact, you know, they could go well into high, mid, I mean, low to low 1,000s, meaning like between 1 and 1,200 cases per caseworker on those SNAP programs. And it gets, as you can imagine, it gets harder to do reveals, which means you have to hire well past $40 million of new employees. Plus, also take the federal shift where they're going to take away 25% of reimbursement on a federal program. People, this is a federal program, not a state program, of which the federal government's going to pay less for those employees on a federal program. And they're doing kind of a penalty system. So to hire the margin of error, which they dictate, will result in more cost shift to Massachusetts. And the projection right now is a $3 million cost shift based on error rates. So obviously the incentive is very simple, is to reduce your error rates. But the fastest way to do error rates is not let people to participate. And I'm going to tell you right now, some states are going to not do that. And what does it mean to Massachusetts? One out of six people in Massachusetts receive some level of SNAP. Mind you, SNAP can be as low as $50. It's not like people are getting like a whole week's grocery out of the program. Everybody does. It can be as low as $50. And that contributes to 20% of all grocery sales. So there's that ripple effect we talked about many times about these social programs. And if your SNAP program is diminished heavily, it will have a 20% impact in grocery stores, which then has a ripple effect in that local economy regarding, you know, jobs and stocking and, you know, prices of food. So you got that looking, staring that down. So you got a homeless shelter problem starting to arise on just a very small part of talking about housing crisis. Then you also have the food stamp crisis. And then, you know, if you we did the groundbreaking in Germantown for the new housing projects with Director Mathis, James Mathis, on this new housing project to put together here and putting one over at 80 Clay Street. And you know, he announced that the federal government's changed how they're going to reimburse public housing. And normally they set the federal government sets the budget for you by giving you money in advance, but that's basically your budget, and they'll come audit you later. Now they're telling you to spend your money now, and then we'll come back and decide whether we want to reimburse you. Now, people think there's free public housing. The answer is yes and no. The answer is more like no, because public housing is driven by the average median price of the region around you, but also driven by the amount of money you make. So Section 8, as you know, a mobile, an RSVP mobile, you usually take the various apartments. But if you're living in public housing, you know, the landlord is Quincy Housing Authority. And it's a percentage of income you bring in. So a lot of folks living there are Social Security, for example, the senior citizens are Social Security. And it's like 30% of your Social Security check goes to public housing. And 70% is paid for by the state and federal government as a subsidy. So you can see where I'm going with this. So you can always kind of project out your revenue because you know how much everyone's making in your public housing as a landlord, and you know what percentage you're getting out of their salaries because they report your income every year and verify it. So you have a like a budget projection, but the federal government tells you we reimburse you later. That means you have to have the money now. But you're not
Right.
charging people, you know what you're charging people.
So is the state prepared to pick up the difference?
Well, this is the tip of a very small iceberg of three programs. We've not talked about Medicaid and
Hmm.
that's going to impact people. We've not talked about things like domestic violence. We've not talked about, you know, any of the environmental stuff. And we're not talking about infrastructure projects because the Bourne Bridge is in danger because they're going to pull federal funding for that.
Energy assistance programs also.
We have LIHEAP is coming up, the winter assistance program for low-income folks, which has adverse effects, not just in those folks, but you know, particularly if you're using oil, has an adverse effect with the remaining oil providers, which is declining. It's been massively declining, but you know, has a ripple effect to them. And of course, MassSave no longer converts people to natural gas. You have to use heat pumps. Heat pumps actually drive your electric bill because it's 100% electric driven. It's nonstop. So, I mean, you know, people have wonderful ideas, but it affects your pocketbook directly. And you know, like I said, this is the very tip of iceberg. We're not even talking about education funding. You know, like, and you know, the governor keeps talking about $7 million, so public safety funding that's been lost, but that's just the tip of an iceberg too. A lot of our anti-terrorism programs, believe it or not, we still have those, you know, are federally funded programs.
And that's after 9/11, yeah.
Yep, and that continues to be an ongoing thing of anti-terror. It's not a good thing that's gone away. So, I mean, we don't know what the final impact is going to be. I mean, you know, between the state taxes lost as a result of federal loss of federal federal economic impact. And then you also have direct program loss. I'm not sure how we're going to address this, to be honest with you. I mean, the rainy day fund sitting over $8 billion, but it takes like 15 years to get to that point of $8 billion. It's not like the money is going to be there somewhere else to replenish the fund. It's like your savings account at home if you lose your job. So it's kind of the same principle. So I'm not sure how much we can draw from that safely. And I know there's things like, you know, obviously the, you know, we have casino trust funds and those monies that go to dedicated purpose. We might have to repurpose some of those other places. And what if they just stop doing reimbursements of community health centers and acute hospitals? We talked about that 2 weeks ago, the state putting up $234 million trying to get the last scrap of Medicare reimbursement before they start changing the program inside the current fiscal year for the federal government, try to get those applications in. So, you know, there's a lot of moving parts here that will affect your life at some stage down the road.
Well, I mean, just the two items you talked about, SNAP and then the loss of the federal tax dollars, that's almost $1 billion right there.
And yeah, in the in this state, you know, in this city, I mean, I have to look at the poverty rate, but you know, we're in over 10% poverty rate in the city of Quincy. And we have about 2,200, give or take, depending on vacancies, senior housing units. And those senior citizens live in a fixed income, right? And you know, we're an older city as a result. So even if not all those units are senior citizens and not those units are couples, I mean, you still can project out probably 3,500 senior citizens in a city of 105,000 people, give or take. And there was 103 in the census. I mean, up. But no, let's call it 105. I mean, that's still a significant part of your population. I mean, it's almost 3% of folks that are living in subsidized senior housing are senior citizens.
And if they don't have that money to spend, then that's, as you say, a domino effect.
Yeah, because a lot of those folks can qualify for SNAP programs and other government programs. And also the fact that the food pantries are going to get overwhelmed because there's nowhere to go. And federal employees that are, you know, furloughed as this gets deeper, they're going to be finding themselves also in food programs. And you may have read some stories around the country that local communities are getting food pantries up for military bases.
Oh, really? Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Because not everybody lives on base.
Well, right, of
We
course, yeah.
have families, so it's not like you bring your kids to the canteen, you know.
Well, I mean, yeah, right here in Quincy, the Adams National Park is closed to work. Everybody's on furlough.
Yeah, we actually got emails from people out of state asking about the national parks in Quincy, believe it or not.
I
And
believe it, yeah.
I have no say in the matter, obviously. I mean, national parks is federal control, but We did a little hunting around, and for example, the Adam's crypts are open. The tomb, the
That's a private or robberly operated entity, yeah.
yeah, it's a weird kind of thing there.
Right.
It's a little complex. We won't talk about right now. It's a little
Right.
more. Yeah,
Yeah. It's not part of the National Park Service though, right?
that's all you need to know. Yeah, it's not part of
Yeah.
the National Parks. It's a real complicated caretaking situation there. So yeah, I mean, we advise them the crypts are open. Obviously, Thomas Crane Library is a historical structure. Quincy City Hall itself is also a structure as well. Hancock Cemetery, and Quincy Historical Society is also open, also privately run. Unfortunately, things like the Dorothy Quincy House is closed for the season. They have really
Right.
long hours, and you can't get to the houses or the mansion. But you do have some outdoor. You can also, but you can still take pictures outdoors. Obviously, take
Oh,
pictures.
yeah. The grounds are open for self-guided tours. Yeah.
Yeah, but you can't go into the house.
Right.
And you have things like various market stones, the first iron furnace, granite quarries and things like that. But
Yep.
it's hard for a family coming up from well, this one I won't get into too much details where they're from, but I mean they're well out of state to ask them to drive all over the city. Just sending them to Quincy Center, it's a good couple hours if they do the walk around, and hopefully they'll use some local stores and restaurants.
Yeah.
And that's part of the tourist impact, right? You lose some economic development when people can't use the coffee, won't use the coffee shop because they're not there to use the coffee shop as well as
Right.
home and whatnot.
Yeah. They won't stay in the hotels. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because they know. And same thing for passive parks. When you close, things like Yellowstone or Acadia, the people, there's an impact on local businesses when people are traveling en route to those locations.
Yeah, it's not just a closed circle. It's all impacting it.
Yeah, and we talked about the visa increases,
Yeah.
and and I will say this again. I told the consulate these guys are desperate for money. They're going to raise fees like crazy because it's not a tax. It's not a tax. We're going to defense going to raise fees like crazy every way they can to get as much money as they can as they desperately try to close their budget deficit, of which has grown larger than the Biden administration. They can say all they want, but the numbers show otherwise. And and I've talked to some other folks in the ESL classes, and ICE is hanging around English classes right now.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, they're doing numbers at this point. I mean, again, I'll refer people back to Bloomberg. Bloomberg is heavily following the deportation situation because of economic impact, and they're running out of criminals. They really are. So, because Biden actually shipped out a ton of them long before the Trump administration got in, so now they're down to basically non-violent offenders or non-offenders at all. And basically, they're trying to make numbers. It's like running a tech company. They're not interested. They're just trying to make their numbers. And mistaken identity is relevant. So you may be aware, in some places, they raid a facility. They zip tie everybody up, including U.S. citizens, for hours. And I mean, there's a civil rights violation coming here with the U.S. citizens that are detained for it. So they must be trying to get to the very edge of how long they can detain people. And not all ICEs law enforcement. That's kind of a myth. It's a civilian violation. So it's not, law enforcement actually have extensive training to become law enforcement. I don't know.
Right.
Police academy?
Right. Yes.
Just saying.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of misconceptions being put by the Trump administration in certain aspects, and other aspects are not. And I think the media is doing a poor job trying to differentiate too, because it's hard to get information to do so, and the various experts can't seem to read the video correctly. But there are U.S. citizens being detained as part of a larger raid as they try to get identification. How do you feel if you're working and you got zip tied for 4 hours? I mean, I always tell people go back into people's shoes because you actually may find yourself in that situation.
That's frightening, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, and you got to prove who you are. I mean, I remember back in my first campaign in 2010, right? In places like New Mexico and Arizona and those states, local sheriffs were elected. They're kind of like an independent body. There's no direct oversight then through elections. They're kind of like this interesting law enforcement where it's not like you have a mayor that controls them or city council. They're elected by the public and they just kind of run loose. And they want ability to check people's driver's licenses at will or produce a visa or passport or U.S. national, U.S. citizen papers to do that. And I remember being in a debate here talking about that stuff. And as a kid, I go to the Federal Street basketball courts, and frankly, you want to carry as little as possible when you're walking out of the house. And if mom's home, you don't have to lock the door, right? So, let's be honest about this. Who's going to get carded first, you or me? And this was lost on the audience when I say that, because it's hard for people to conceive that one, you could potentially be carded, but two, anybody else that personally could potentially be carded as a non-US citizen. If you didn't have identification, these sheriffs in the Southwest want to be able to just, take you to jail and act like INS or now ICE. And we're kind of in this kind of weird situation again. And China, for example, is a country that requires travel papers domestically in specific circumstances of certain communities. You can't go up to another city to work unless you have travel papers. You have a First Amendment right in this country under the Commerce Clause. Well, First Amendment right, not just for speech, but freedom of movement. But you also have Commerce Clause right freedom. So you actually don't need to have travel papers to go to California, for example. Real ID is more like a safety issue regarding anti-terrorism, which we can debate if that works or not. However, they need a more solidified verification process on air travel. I kind of get, but there's nothing stopping you from getting into your car, get into your car, and you just kind of just drive across to California with only a Massachusetts ID for the purpose of driver's license. Nevada can't stop you at the border because you're a Massachusetts resident. So, it's freedom movement is right of every citizen. And that's how it works in this country. So again, I like to say, put yourself in those shoes, and it's entirely possible if you're listening to this program and you work in a factory setting or you work in a manufacturing setting and there's a lot of other people of color around you and the ICE comes in, there's the possibility you're going to be zip tied for 4 hours.
It's frightening, scary.
No, I mean, this is the world we're living in. And people, like I said last time, people don't need government until you need government. And people don't think it can happen to you until it happens to you.
Okay, we're gonna have to leave that there because we don't know how the story's gonna end yet.
No, I don't either. I mean, there's a lot, we're getting hit with too many things at one time. And it's moving so quickly. It's very hard to digest all of it at once. And you got to diminish media in some ways, because as we discussed before, how to finance news has very much changed over the decades, which makes it more challenging. And then people pick and choose their own news, meaning that they don't come in uninformed to become informed. They come in pre-informed by their preconceptions to then be informed in a manner that reinforces their preconceptions. I'm Asian American, I'm Chinese. I mean, modern minority will always follow me around because people have these preconception biases built into American culture that, they already know what I am before I tell you who I am. So different from Irish and Italians from 100 years ago.
Yeah, well, that's true. I experienced that myself in public schools for sure.
I think people forget it's, there's a good chance that you may have a family member 2 or 3 generations back, or even the current generation now that, has experienced what you've seen today. But lessons of your parents and your aunts and uncles and grandparents and aunts and uncles to you should be stories that you should take with you of how you should treat other people, because you don't want your family treated that way as well.
Yeah, I do agree with that for sure. We haven't talked at all about what's going on at the State House, Jackie.
Not too much. I mean, I got 3 public hearings. I had one on October 1st. I've got 2 coming up on the 14th to the 20th. I'm trying to clear my plate of bills and get them all out by December. So, I've been working the staff regarding the schedule because, remind folks I have a 60-day reporting period plus a 30-day extension I call it a 60-90-day rule plus one more chance of an extension to March. My objective is not to utilize the long extensions. Try to, get everything done by December, just clear the plate of the committee work. And, obviously you have to work with the committee members or depending, their vote, I have to chase their vote sometimes because it responds to the email quickly, right? So part of responsibility for herding cats. We actually have a formal session tomorrow, Wednesday. I'm still not sure what the agenda is, to be frank with you. I know that we're in the reconciliation period for the final close out of FY25, where we get the final numbers, the actual finished collection, because a lot of people, not a lot, actually, that's not a correct statement. Some people delay their taxes to October, and businesses will delay their taxes in October, and you still have the final collection and estimated taxes from last year. So you got a lot of final numbers coming up, and we'll get those quickly. And the auditor's office has already declared that there'll be no rebate this year because that weird ballot question rule that
Oh, yeah.
we made some adjustments to or tried to whatever. I mean, if the whole thing about if taxes collected exceeds like payroll, there's a rebate involved. But again, that's like hitting the lottery. It only happened twice in 50 years, essentially. So, or 40 years. So, that didn't happen. So we're going to get closer to reconciliation of the budget. And outside of that, I'm not entirely clear what we're going to do next. State House News Service has reported that House Ways and Means has 312 bills already in committee as of last week. The Senate has like 217.
Wow.
So, as the committees keep pushing bills out of committee, many go to Ways and Means, and they're going to get a lot more bills soon in Ways and Means. And then, of course, lobbyists and advocates will be going to Ways and Means, and myself will also be going to Ways and Means to try to, get bills moving committee. So, as they prepare for their, budget process in December, when you get the consensus revenue figures. So,
Right.
I don't know. I'm not honest with you. I'm not sure exactly what's going on exactly going on right now.
Okay.
I just know based on past schedules, there's certain things we need to do. But right now, I'm hyper focused on getting my committee work done. I want to get
Sure.
this done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, Senator Ed Kennedy from Low passed away last week.
Right. I saw that. Yeah.
So there's a wake this evening in Low, which I'll not get to, but there's also a funeral on Wednesday morning. It's resulted in some scheduling readjustments. With both branches to accommodate the funeral. And then I just have to do some mundane stuff. For example, I actually do sexual harassment training. I'm required to do sexual harassment training, of which there's classes tomorrow. I have to attend those seminars. So I have to do some administrative stuff just like everybody else. Under the House rules and the House handbook, reps and senators are required to do things that actually all the other employees are required to do as well.
Yeah, okay, very good. Do you know when the DPU is going to come out with the rate structure for the winter season?
The DPU doesn't actually set the rate structure on the gas itself. The gas is partially is essentially decoupled from the government.
Oh.
The transmission rates are controlled by the federal government. The distribution rate is controlled by the state. As I say, big wires, big pipes, federal government. Small pipes, small wires, state government. It's
Okay.
it's a that's a little oversimplification, but it's the easiest visual I can give you.
Yeah.
And it's all dependent on rate cases. So I'm not aware there's a pending rate case by any company, but I could be
Oh.
wrong. I've
Okay.
not looked that closely at the DPU docket. But the DPU can independently on its own, conduct its own audits regarding various companies in targeted areas. So, the Healey administration has filed bills to try to. Has she filed a bill yet? I think she has to try to address some of the distribution rate issues associated with your bills. And I really don't know what they're going to do. I mean, obviously, you guys know I work in the AG's office. I do something about utility rate making. I'm not exactly a super expert, but I work like four cases and a bunch of reconciliations.
Yeah.
So it's like I do understand the basics. So I'm not entirely clear. What's going to happen? I know Mark
Okay.
Spivak, our good friend from Braintree, is the chair of Telecommunications and Energy in the House.
That was my next question. Okay.
And he's, Mark is trying to sort out, how this is going to work. So,
Okay.
but one of the things I'm dealing with actually, my committee is solar panel, a customer accountability, a customer, what do you call it, customer protections and notifications regarding, purchasing solar panels and what happens after you purchase solar panels. So,
Yes.
while, my committee is not, telecommunications and energy because the nature of consumer protection. I do have kind of this like weird ability to kind of put my fingers in anything I want.
Yeah. Well, it all impacts consumers, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's I like to tell my friends I'm actually chair of a committee that's more powerful than people give it credit for.
You're the underdog.
Well, it's such a large diversity of topics.
Yeah.
That I engage with, which we won't bore you because we talked about it like 100 times in the show already.
Right. Yeah.
You
Yeah.
know, I, I'm, you know, it's, I do a lot of work and it's a lot of subject matters that don't touch each other. So, for example, yesterday I had a conference call with the Credit Reporting Agency Association regarding how to handle medical debt reporting to credit reporting companies and what the impacts are, and how we have conflicts with federal law because the federal government actually also controls credit reporting and also has some say regarding debt service, basically your personal debt, what you owe businesses, right? Well, state Department of Division of Banks has control over debt collectors as well, right? I had a meeting of energy company that came and introduced themselves to me, kind of, a former DPU commissioner out of Pennsylvania. We had a great conversation how things work in Pennsylvania and some local politics there, and try to gauge what's going on here. And also had a meeting. Also, we had a big staff meeting because we haven't had a big staff meeting. We have a new staffer coming on board as a researcher, so we had to bring him up to speed. And then I had some conversations with speaker staff about things going in committee and what my projections are going to be going December and then also to early spring, which may change in 2 months. However,
Right.
I had to give them a basic projection of what's happening. So, yesterday, I had actually also had a conference call in the morning too. So conference call, staff meeting, speaker's office, talking about medical debt, talking to an energy company. And then last night I had to go to the Crean Foundation Day, representing actually the legislature, because only legislature there, representing the legislature with the Korean government.
Busy, busy.
It's people kind of have this idea that, we're sitting here talking about a dining room, but that's all they do. It's very engaged, and not everything makes social media because they don't have like a whole crew of people running around with their cameras. I'm not a mayor, running around with cameras following me around so we can throw on social media. I mean,
Right.
no, and my staff doesn't like me touching social media because I make a lot of mistakes. And then you get a little tired. It's not like you have time to like, oh, here's my cell phone. I need like nine shots. Would you mind taking time of your time to do it for me? It's a much more intricate and diverse job that I do. And I hope through our conversations over the course of 5+ years now, it gives you a little insight about, my life. Essentially this someday this will end. We could do like a 5-hour wrap-up show, I suppose.
Our swan song.
The Swan Sean show. I'm not sure I'm allowed to swear on QATV, but
We'll have to play that at 3 in the morning. That's awesome.
it's gonna be the potty mouth show.
I bet you that'll be the highest watched show.
No, that's true. Probably people probably want to watch that. Tacky
That's
lose,
right.
tacky
That'll go
lose. I
viral,
just lose my mind show. I'm out of here, guys. Drop the mic and here we go.
Tacky.
But no, it's very engaging, right? I love this job. It's super engaging. A lot of issues to do on the state level, foreign governments, community issues, whether it be local community, like a good neighborhood dinner house neck, or going to see Korean residents talk about their concerns. And where they're from and what they're doing and what the kids doing, right? No different than I do at home with families here. And people see me at the supermarket sometime on like a Tuesday night and or like a Friday morning. Go, well, that's it. That's all the time I got. I got to get in there and get my groceries and get out. And
Right.
I got my mom's doctor's appointments, which there are a lot more than ever that I'm working around. And I still got like a dead tree in the back I got to deal with. I mean, I'm hoping for the right weather day and hopefully don't hurt myself. It's not a big one, thankfully. And like I got a little bit of a fence that's dinged up. And I get my brother come over and we'll take care of that when I find the right piece of wood. So again, I'm no different from everybody else. I got all these little things to do, and you got a job and I got a job, and we're trying to figure out how to make it all work.
That's it, exactly. What do we do now? Let folks know how to get a hold of you.
Sure, the State House is open for tours. So if you got any friends from out of state, let them know the State House is open for tours. And as you all know, I very much encourage everybody to come to State House to come to a building built in 1797. And I'm in room 42 in the new part built in 1899, although 1897, depending who you ask, which is an interesting mystery. But yeah, room 42 of the State House. We are fully staffed. We are working on kind of like everybody's like running around someplace scenario. So hopefully we're not Well, not everybody's in a meeting someplace in the building when you visit, but room 42 estate house. 617-722-2370. 617-722-2370 is the phone number. Please leave a message. I don't care who you leave a message with. Please be aware it's not my suite. So my name doesn't come up first if the person that's taking the front desk is overwhelmed. So the automated system kicks in when the front desk is overwhelmed. And just leave a message with anyone. We'll get it. And it's an emergency. We'll get back to you quickly. TACKEY.CHAN, MAHouse.gov. I do see all my emails. We do prioritize constituent services. As you already heard, unemployment is up. We're going to have a housing crisis in terms of homelessness. We're going to have a food stamp crisis, SNAP program crisis. So you can imagine what the emails and phone calls are going to be coming soon in the next 4 or so weeks. So, but I do prioritize those concerns first and try to take care of them. Tacky Chan at Facebook, State Representative Chan, State Representative Tacky Chan on Facebook. You can see some of my pictures are coming going, and there's Instagram. Tacky Chan at X is being phased out because honestly, nobody looks at it. Our numbers are showing internally that it doesn't work anymore. Tacky Chan at ORG, people actually do use that to message us. But also, you can find things like QCAP's phone number on there, for example, and QATV's phone number on there, for example, that you could do that on your own. MALegislature.gov, you can watch the video of all of us and look up your bills. You do not need to call me to find a bill. You can do it yourself if you want to, and have a great login sign-up program that helps you monitor the bills that is important to you. And of course, QATV at QATV.org. Drop a line to Joe and the folks at QATV if you like me or you want to get rid of me. Tell Joe to get rid of me. But also, we also entertain outside questions. So if something you want a little more clarity on, or a new topic that doesn't matter. If you want to talk about like what I think of the Patriots, sure. I mean, I haven't watched a lot of football because I've been too busy, but if you want to talk about that kind of stuff, we're happy to do that
Yeah,
too.
we're open to suggestions for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, if you want to talk like something that's not political, we're very happy to talk about
That's right. We have
non-political.
no agenda here.
Exactly. So, feel free to write in Joe, on any topic, and we're happy to have a discussion about it. I may know an answer or I may not. As you heard today, I do not have all the answers, but I'm fully willing to tell you that.
Right. And maybe find out for you.
Yeah, and we'll come back next week to follow up on some questions that we couldn't answer today.
Great to talk to you, Tacky. Thank you so much. And again, happy Harvest Moon.
Thank you, and you'll have a good day as well, and enjoy the weather while you can.